Mini episode 620 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by the Pullins Group, delivering public affairs, consulting, and marketing services for small businesses trying to grow. Follow them on the web at PullinsGroup.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 620. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with our preview of Fargo Episode 2.2 titled Before the Law. Here's our top five developments from Episode 2.1 heading into this week's installment. Number five, just like Season 1 did, Season 2 will be comprised by picking elements from the past and constructing them in different ways. The movie featured a geeky non-criminal pairing up with a couple of bumbling criminals for a scam gone wrong, necessitating a cover-up. Season 1 featured a geeky non-criminal pairing up with a devious criminal mastermind to cover up some murders. Season 2 looked like it was going to ape the movie, with the typewriter salesman playing the part of the geeky non-criminal and Rye Gerhart the bumbling criminal, although he also had something in common with Lester Nygaard, who was pushed over the edge to commit a crime of passion. But the great thing about the writers of the Fargo TV franchise is that they keep you guessing every year. Rye was the cause of the diner massacre that is seemingly the driving event that kicks off this season, but shockingly, he won't be around for the rest of it. That's because the freak accident, the hit and run caused by Peggy Blomquist, now looks to be the real catalyst for the season. All of us Fargo completists are in uncharted territory. In a world where the investigation of that initial violent killing spree is for naught, because the killer himself, due to quite a fluke, is himself as dead as the victims. This development happens in parallel with the looming battle for control of organized crime in the Northern Prairie Territory that is coming, and the demise of Otto Gerhart. The Kansas City thugs are on their way, and the smart money is that once hostilities break out, the Gerhart family will presume that they're responsible for the missing Rye. Meanwhile, the truth of his fate lies in the Blomquist garage freezer. It's going to be a heck of a season. Number four, as the ordinary citizen who rashly commits regrettable acts, Peggy Blomquist is the inheritor of the legacy of Lester Nygaard and Jerry Lundegaard. Like them, there's clearly a loose nut or two under the surface of her skin that has prepared her for this moment. Her ramblings to her husband Ed about the need for self-actualization mark her early on as another one of the 70s whack jobs that the entertainment industry has long satirized, and her clear disregard of gentle Ed's wishes marks her as a selfish and manipulative person. But what she doesn't have in common with them is the complete knowledge of what she's going to be covering up. All she knows is that she ran a dude over, and it's to her further discredit that she doesn't seem to know or care if he was a good person. Rye was a scumbag, yes, but you get the feeling that Peggy wouldn't have lost any sleep even if it turned out that he was a saint. She has no awareness, yet anyway, of the massacre that he perpetrated and the standing that his family has in regional crime circles. As somebody with delusions of grandeur stemming from little other than her own attractiveness, she's actually about to become ground zero of a huge investigation and a mob war, while being completely unaware of it at the outset. Peggy is somebody who's probably always aspired to live the Chinese saying, "May you live in interesting times." She's about to find out exactly why that saying is a curse. Number three, Lou Salverson is the saddest Fargo protagonist yet. Part of this is because we know from season one, the Salverson sequel, that Lou is widowed early on, and here his ill wife Betsy almost lingers as a ghost, given that we know where the trajectory of her disease is leading. Additionally, Lou saw the horrors of war in Vietnam, so he comes to this story with more of a grim, world-weary perspective than we're used to seeing from this franchise. He will be channeling his pain, which comes from circumstances that he cannot control, into his job, which for a man of his intelligence and commitment, offers that elusive sense of control. Given that he, and especially Molly, factor into a future that we've already seen, there is no mystery about whether he'll survive. But there is mystery about what takes his grim resolve at this moment in time and transforms him to a man that we know eventually had enough of police work and tried to convince Molly to feel the same way. Number two, conspiracies, UFOs, we may be going to some weird places. Lou's friend Carl Weathers figuratively wears the tinfoil hat wherever he goes, leading to some amusing monologues and a prophetic warning that the Diner murder investigation is only going to get bigger. But you have to wonder if his rantings may tie in any way to Rye's post-murder moment of distraction outside the diner, when he appeared to be witnessing a UFO right before his head entered Peggy's car the hard way. Fargo has moved into weird territory in the past, including the fish hurricane of season one, and the intimations at various times that Lauren Malvo had some kind of special powers. But what we saw here intimates that we may be going to more of an overt place involving unexplained phenomena. We shall see. Number one, this is the first incarnation of Fargo to really stand out as a period piece. The 70s are perhaps the most colorful decade of all time, certainly in terms of fashion and decor choices that are regrettable in retrospect. So it's somewhat inevitable that a story set in 1979 would be thick with sideburns, wide collars, and the whole nine yards of sartorial excess. But we haven't really seen this commitment to capturing a specific moment in time before from this franchise. There was nothing that really screamed out 1987 at every turn in the movie, nor was there anything that called a lot of attention to season one being set in 2006 and 2007. Even with the show's opening sequence that involved the Jimmy Carter malaise speech and the amusing fictional Ronald Reagan movie excerpt in the beginning, episode 2.1 pounded the viewers at every turn that we were at a hinge point in history, the end of a post-Vietnam era of doubt and confusion, with Reagan's Morning in America just around the corner. Actually, Reagan himself on the campaign trail was just around the corner, to be portrayed by Bruce Campbell later this season in what should be a real delight. In a way, it's a bit jarring to see even the rural, far-flung parts of America so immersed in the 70s sensibility here, given that the events of the movie appear just 8 years on the timeline, not long at all in a place where time moves very slowly, and there's scant evidence of the 70s ever having occurred in that portrayal. Regardless, it's another interesting twist on how the franchise is evolving, and it's a sign early on that Season 2 may have the most unpredictable twists yet. We'll be here to chronicle them all. Thanks for tuning in to this mini-episode of the FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.